It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, let's draw. A Wisconsin art teacher teaches us how to get started with drawing and how to find the courage to create, no matter our skill levels. First, thousands of Wisconsin college students are graduating this month, but amid the COVID-19 pandemic, they face a stark reality while working to find a place in the job market. Rich Kramer reports that high-stakes internships are hard to come by, and the economy is hemorrhaging jobs as businesses and states work to prevent the spread of the new coronavirus.
Earlier this month, UW-Madison held an online commencement ceremony for graduates watching with their families in homes scattered around the world. It was in stark contrast to those held last year in a packed Camp Randall Stadium. Chancellor Rebecca Blank lauded students for pushing through their classes despite monumental change.
You have completed your degree in the middle of a life-threatening pandemic that has disrupted every aspect of life. Your resilience and adaptability deserves appreciation.
The sudden transition to online classes due to COVID-19 shook higher education, but the impacts facing the graduating class of 2020 are much more severe. Triple major Laura Downer says COVID-19 robbed her of a dream internship with the U.S. State Department in Berlin, Germany. After applying for 2 years, she learned this winter she was in.
And then just a few weeks ago, I got the email that said, you know, due to COVID-19 travel restrictions, we're canceling all these internships and not postponing them to a future date. And because of certain restrictions, I probably won't be able to reapply.
Downer was interested in becoming a foreign service officer and saw the internship as a way to test the waters. Now she says there will be pressure to find a more sustainable full-time job elsewhere. Rebecca Pere is an associate dean of UW-Madison's Letters and Science Career Initiative.
So we have a situation where students are sort of waiting for further decisions to be made, waiting for a start date, or now, you know, the worst case scenario is they had an opportunity, it was taken away, and they are having to rapidly regroup.
Pere says jobs in retail and marketing communications have dried up, but she's seeing new opportunities in technology and software development. She says her office is partnering with companies and alumni to offer micro-internships and career simulations.
Graduating in a bad economy like this, it has long-lasting economic consequences.
That's Marquette University Emeritus Professor of Economics, Abdur Chowdhury.
And I think that for the next 10 years, the class of 2020, they will likely earn less than they would have had they graduated when job opportunities are plentiful.
What's worse, says Chowdhury, is that new graduates won't be eligible for the same type of unemployment benefits older workers may qualify for. Also, he says many students may choose to stay in school while racking up more student debt. UW Stout computer and electrical engineering major Jacob Hillebrand was lucky enough to land a job with diesel engine manufacturer Cummins before graduation. He says he's grateful for the opportunity, but his position may already be impacted by the fallout from COVID-19.
I think Cummins announced that they're doing subtle pay cuts and subtle hour cuts to a lot of their employees, just kind of across the board. So I think I'll be working 4.5 days a week instead of 5.
UW-Eau Claire elementary education major Becky Presley was offered a teaching job in Texas where she student taught, though she's hoping to stay in Wisconsin. But she says it's taking longer to hear back from districts she's applied to.
So, you know, I'll submit an application and normally it would be reviewed in 1 to 2 weeks. But my career counselor said, you know, maybe wait 2 to 3, you know, it might take a little longer just because people's priorities are elsewhere.
As stay-at-home orders begin to lift, some businesses are opening back up. Still, the state's economy is daunting, with more than 300,000 weekly unemployment claims reported by the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development. That's an increase of more than 1,000% compared with numbers from last spring. Rich Kramer, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Rebecca Pryor-Pare joins us now for more on the job outlook for new grads. She's the Associate Dean and Director of the Letters and Science Careers Initiative and Success Works at UW-Madison. Rebecca, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we heard you there in that story a little bit. Can you talk more about what you might be doing and what students might be doing this time of year in more normal circumstances? Where are they in that job picture at this point, usually?
For sure. So, you know, typically our graduating students would have participated in the recruiting cycle that starts in September for May graduates. So September through March. So, you know, under normal circumstances, many students would have secured their job offers by March and would be heading off into their new jobs and maybe relocating to a new city and getting set up for their new life and their next steps. Students who are continuing, often interning, quite a number of our students intern each year, and they may be doing the same thing. They might be interning locally, they may be interning in a nearby city, and maybe relocating, as far as, say, San Francisco or New York City for those internships. So there's usually a lot of transition right after the semester ends, and then sort of gearing up to start their new work. It's very different than this year.
Now, students didn't get the typical in-person graduation ceremony, but a lot of celebrities and prominent figures stepped up, including former President Barack Obama with a commencement speech. I want to give a listen to some of what he had to say about what the pandemic means for new graduates.
It's also pulled the curtain back on another hard truth, something that we all have to eventually accept once our childhood comes to an end. You know, all those adults that you used to think were in charge and knew what they were doing? Turns out they don't have all the answers. A lot of them aren't even asking the right questions. So if the world's going to get better, it's going to be up to you.
He goes on to say this is meant to be inspiring, not intimidating. But as you talk to students, how are they feeling? Inspired, scared, confused? What kind of morale and attitude are you hearing from the students you're working with?
Well, certainly, I think we're seeing a lot of disappointment and frustration. So students who, most what we're seeing generally are those students who had secured full-time jobs. Most employers are doing what they can to keep them. And so as you heard in Rich's story, they might be reducing folks' hours or postponing start dates. But, for the most part, we're hearing folks try to retain those new hires. But for the students that had internships, I think what we're hearing quite a bit is that those were canceled. And so students who had really big hopes or secured the dream internship experience suddenly had that taken away. And that was a lot of work to prepare for that. They celebrated that, and to have that removed is just so disappointing. And I think what we're seeing now is a bit of anxiety, for students who may not have secured jobs, are just graduated and are on that job market now, students who lost their internships and are trying to figure out what to do. There's just a lot of unknowns. And as they're navigating all those unknowns, there's a lot of insecurity. There's a lot of, waiting. There's a lot of feeling like this waiting period may not end anytime soon. So we're trying to help students with that resilience, right? That this recession will not likely last forever, that we will get through this. And many of them have the skills to do that. So we do see some students really, have the fortitude to really push through this. And so we're kind of seeing the gamut all across the board, from being really anxious and frustrated, disappointed, to, I'm just going to try to find my way through this and power through. So big spectrum.
We're talking to Rebecca Pryor-Perre. She's the Associate Dean and Director of the Letters and Science Career Initiative and Success Works at UW-Madison. She's with us to talk about the job outlook for 2020 graduates. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you are graduating this year from college or from high school, what has been your experience? Are you looking for a job? Has an internship or a likely job dried up for you? Or is it still panning out? If you're a parent who has a kid in this situation, or a teacher who works with these young adults, or if you're an employer, what has changed for you in terms of offering internships or jobs to new grads? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our talk now with Rebecca Pryor-Perre, the Associate Dean and Director of the Letters and Science Career Initiative and Success Works at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. We're talking about new graduates at the college level and coming up the high school level, leaving school, coming out into a tough job market. If this is you we're talking about, we'd love to hear your perspective. Call in now at 800-642-1234. What has it been like? What are your concerns or problems right now? Whether you are that graduating high school or college student or a parent thereof or someone who works with them and maybe is giving them advice right now. If you're an employer, also, what are you looking for in a new graduate that you might want to bring on board as an intern, as an employee? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Rebecca, you were just saying everybody's story is unique, of course. Is there some general advice you would offer, though, to those new graduates coming out of college at a really unfortunate time in a lot of ways?
Yeah, there's a... You know, a few things, especially if students don't have jobs and they're in the process of seeking. I think that the biggest challenge students are going to face right now, or our recent graduates are going to face, is that, you know, this job search is going to take longer. And we really need to help students foster some resilience in terms of, you know, how long, and set expectations. How long could this job search take? You know, it may be many applications as opposed to, you know, few. Even last year, students were being picked up very quickly for new hires, and the market was great for new graduates. So this year is going to look very different. So that adjustment in expectations is really important. And then what we're telling students is this is the time to network and make connections. So if you can go back to your university or college and connect with some of the alumni that graduated from there, they have really great advice. They can give you updates on the industry. They may be able to open doors for you or know about opportunities you hadn't considered. And that is one of the best things that students can be doing. I know at the University of Wisconsin, we have really geared up this summer to support students, particularly in this situation with virtual advising, case studies and experiential learning, and a new partnership around micro internships, which are short-term paid projects that students can do with somebody in industry to get some to earn some money and get some exposure to the industry and make a good connection with a prospective employer.
I know a lot of campuses have some kind of program that aims to help their current students as they enter into the job market. Is this something that your programs in particular keep going after graduation, that you might keep working with that student even though they're done with the actual university part of their career?
Absolutely. Yep. Universities are very invested in how our students are, you know, taking advantage of their education and taking those next steps. So whether they're headed to graduate school or they're headed into the world of work, we have services that support students. And it's, you know, some cases it's in perpetuity, some cases it's for the next couple of years, but definitely students should be revisiting their career centers.
And how important historically are the internships we were talking about earlier as that, you know, pathway from education to career? Is this something that most people are doing or had been doing, I should say, or is it, you know, few and far between?
No, it's definitely, if students are headed into the workforce, internships are one of the best ways for students to actually land jobs. So what we tend to see is, what we have been seeing is a real investment in internship programs by organizations. That's where they train those students, they groom them, they get them exposed to different parts of the organization, and then they select their best students from that and make job offers in some cases a year ahead of time. So those internships are really important for students to be able to demonstrate the skills that they've been developing in school, to make those professional connections, to find opportunities that they're excited about, and to expose them to different types of occupations and work that's out there. So those internships are quite important, and I really feel for students who have lost out on some of those opportunities this summer, because I think I'm sure a lot of anxiety about, okay, well, if I can't intern this summer, what can I do? And we've been telling students that we actually think that that might be one of the top interview questions students will get, you know, in the next year, which is, okay, so maybe you weren't able to do an internship. We understand, you know, COVID happened. So what did you do in that time to continue to move yourself forward? And So this is, even if the student can't do the internship, it's really important for them to continue to explore work opportunities, to find out what they're passionate about, to make connections in those industries so that future opportunities will be available to them.
We are talking about the job situation facing new grads, high school or college. You can join in if you have a question or a story to share or maybe advice at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Rebecca, we've been focusing on those graduates, the current class of graduates, which makes sense. But do you have thoughts for people earlier in their college careers or even the high school students entering college now? What kind of things would you suggest they be thinking about?
Well, I think, you know, that one of the number one reasons students go to college to begin with is to position themselves better economically, right? To have a better job opportunity going forward. And so I think that students' career development and exploration of opportunities can start at any time. You know, I think when students start college, their understanding of what kinds of occupations exist and what those things look like and what it might feel like to try that on, those are really limited to the people that they know really well. You know, maybe a family member, you know, favorite aunt or uncle, a parent, best friend's parent. And then beyond that, it's sort of mystery, right? And I used to see students who are coming up to graduation sometimes who I think, you know, sort of envision that period after graduation was like a big black hole. Like, I'm not really sure what's out there. I'm not really sure what's for me. So the more that students can engage in finding out what is out there through talking to people, you know, reading about different industries and occupations, the better they can set themselves up both, you know, academically to find the right majors, to find the extracurricular opportunities like internships and study abroad and student leadership opportunities that can position them in the future. And career centers love working with our first and second year students. And as a matter of fact, at UW, we have a number of first year and second year courses around career development designed to help students position themselves to really take hold of their education and dive in. And I think that that's something that students can be thinking about as they're coming into college, that they can be exploring those opportunities. We know the recession will probably stick around for a while. Precisely how long, we don't know. But students can be taking steps now to position themselves for graduation next year or in 3 years or 4 years or whatever makes whatever their particular situation is.
I want to bring on a caller now. Alex is with us in Eau Claire. Alex, hi.
Hi. I wanted to talk about just the experience I have with trying to find a job. I'm moving to New Hampshire in August, and I've been really struggling to find a job. I've applied to over 20 different positions for education, for teaching, and I haven't gotten any response back from any schools. And I feel like I've done a good job the past 5 years working with kids. I've been mentoring in different, and I even like manage a team of mentors, and I still have not heard anything. So I thought I had a decent resume. I did a lot of work for it, and I still haven't heard anything at all, which is kind of frustrating.
Well, Alex, thank you for sharing your story. Good luck finding a job as you move out there. I mean, schools are one place we've heard, Rebecca. Their budgets are up in the air right now, and they may not. Mm-hmm. Alex, a perfectly qualified candidate like Alex, they might be waiting till later in the summer, maybe before they know how many positions they have funded.
Yeah. Absolutely. And we're seeing that in many industries, actually, where folks are holding back a little bit until they have better clarity on what's going to happen as states reopen. So, yeah, unfortunately, this is that sort of feeling about that waiting game that I was talking to you about, that students are, you know, not hearing back right away, might not hear back for quite some time, and are kind of in this holding pattern that's very, that can be very stressful.
Thanks again for sharing your story, Alex. Bob joins us next in Delafield. Bob, hello.
Hello.
Hi, what do you want to tell us about, Bob?
Hey, so I have a son. He's actually a junior this year at UW-Madison. He's an engineering major, and he had an internship at Mercury Marine and Fond du Lac, and then it was going to be also a co-op, so he would mm-hmm. intern over the summer and then work there through the December. And so first it got pushed back and then it got canceled altogether. So he's in a bad spot because he hadn't signed up for any classes for the fall because he wasn't going to be there. He subleased his apartment for the fall because he wasn't going to be there. And now he's trying to get in to sign up for classes, and they're filled, and he's waitlisted and things. So I wonder if you had any suggestions for that kind of situation.
Bob, thanks for the call. Any thoughts, Rebecca?
Yeah. First of all, I feel for your son. That's very frustrating. And I know that the co-ops for our engineering students are very important and really wonderful experiences. I would definitely make sure he's connecting with his advisors to talk about, you know, what are the essential courses that he needs this semester if he's not 100% certain about that. And then come the beginning of the fall semester to be reaching out to faculty to make sure that he can get in. There's often quite a bit of turnover at the beginning of the year as students resolve some of the scheduling conflicts that they have. And seats do open. And if faculty, you know, faculty are pretty sympathetic about student situations, and particularly this one. So if he's able to explain why he wasn't able to get into this class, why he needs it now, faculty are usually very receptive and can open spots as spots become available.
Good luck to your son, Bob. As we wrap up, Rebecca, that brings me to an important point. I was a very bad student in one important way. I didn't reach out to the services that were available to me. It sounds like keeping those lines of communication open, reaching out to offices like yours or comparable ones at schools and colleges around the state is going to be key here.
Absolutely. Students have so many resources available to them at these universities, and we're all working very hard to, you know, to operate in this virtual environment so we can be there to answer students' questions, to make sure that they're positioned to succeed. And the last thing we want students to do, and I think particularly those who may not have secured a job opportunity or feeling like they're hung up with the internship situation, the last thing we want them to do is just try to figure it all out on their own. We have all of these resources to support them. We have incredible connections with industry, with alumni. We can really help students and make a difference. And, you know, for the caller earlier who was talking about, you know, not having success with the job market, we can review those applications with students and coach them up to have really good brand presence and really good resumes. So there are definitely some things that we can be doing to help students.
Rebecca, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you all.
That's Rebecca Pryor-Perret, Associate Dean and Editor of Letters in Science, Career Initiatives, and Success Works at the UW-Madison. She joined us to talk about the job market for new college graduates right now. Coming up, we'll get a lesson in drawing from a Wisconsin art teacher. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the Wisconsin Elections Commission voted unanimously to send absentee ballot applications to roughly 2.7 million registered voters in the state. We'll learn more about that decision and what it could mean for the 2020 elections. First, Let's Draw was a program that aired on WHA Radio from 1936 to 1970, educating school children on how to draw over the air. Let's take a listen to some tips when it comes to drawing.
Here are a few tricks that make it ever so much more fun. First, don't lean over your desk as if you were doing the hardest, most awful work in the world. Let's all sit up straight and smile while we're drawing. And then don't make your hand and fingers do all the drawing either. Draw in such a way that your entire arm can swing when you make a stroke. And of course, here's tip number three. We don't use rulers at all.
An art teacher joins us now for some drawing advice. Not sure if smiling is required. You could join in if you'd like at 800-642-1234. If you've been trying to start a new creative hobby lately, what got you going? Is it any good? Do you care if it's good or not? You probably shouldn't. Call 800-642-1234. Chad Spurzel-Wuchterl is a visual art instructor and fine art department chair at Ronald Reagan College Preparatory High School in Milwaukee. By the way, he's the 2020 Wisconsin High School Teacher of the Year. Chad, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, can you remember what it was like for you back when you were first learning to draw or paint?
Yes, I can. I remember, well, the thing is, I always came from a creative family, so they always encouraged me to draw and paint or just be creative in general. My father was an architect, so it was very natural in our home for the siblings to be all running around creating and drawing. But when it came to school, I also remember the fundamentals. First you're really excited to create and really excited to draw. But learning those key components was something that ended up changing your style and learning the technique. And going through elementary through middle school, it was always an exciting time when that art cart would come in the room and the time would pass so quickly. So,
and that's through middle school. Now, at some point in a lot of our lives, my life included, we kind of fall out of love with drawing. We get, I don't know, self-conscious about it, and we give it up. What happens there, Chad, to many of us?
That's something I've always been interested in, and why does that happen? At some point in time of our life, many of us quit, right? We stop. We put high demands on ourselves, and we give up. And we start judging ourselves extremely harsh. And that stops us from continuing to create, continuing to draw. We think we should be these Picassos, these Michelangelos by the time we are in middle school, right? And if that doesn't happen, we stop. And we also see this with, if you think about like a basketball player and we watch them on TV, right? And they're doing a wonderful job. But what we don't see are the hundreds and hundreds of hours of practice it took to get there. And being creative and drawing is the same way. And one of the biggest tricks is to stay inspired. It does have that joy that comes with it, right? And when it comes to the quitting, especially the older we get, I believe that many of us have to relearn how to play. We have to relearn how to create without inhibition. You give a kid some pillows and a blanket, and what does he have? He's got a fort, right? And he'll play with that fort for hours on end. But we give a pillow and a blanket to an adult, and it's nap time, right? So, I mean, we have to learn how to play and create. And play equals experimentation. And experimentation leads to sustained creation, drawing, experimenting, allow your work to be expressionistic at times, and allowing yourself just to be free to sometimes fail forward, to learn from your mistakes, and allowing that to happen and understanding this, that it's okay to not always be perfect, and allow, and maybe even making yourself make work that's not perfect. But yes, that is a hard thing to get over, that failure or that fear of doing something wrong when it comes to an artistic process.
Chad Spurzel-Wuchterl is with us. He teaches art and is the Fine Art Department Chair at Ronald Reagan College Preparatory High School. He is getting us inspired to try drawing, even if it's been a long time, even if we're not, like me, particularly good at it. So Chad, sit us down. What is a good way to get started, not go out and get a lot of equipment and gear, but just to sit down and get ourselves drawing?
I would say that, you know, so many of us, especially right now, we don't have all the tools. We want to start, right? We want to start creating. We want to start making. And everybody thinks we have to have specific tools to do it. And sure, we can. That can come down the road. You can get the beautiful artist pencils. You can get the most beautiful canvas. But so many people have started to create work, and I think we've all experienced the staring at the blank canvas for like 1,000 hours, right? What are we going to put on here? And the biggest thing we need to do is just grab some things you have around the house. If you've got some paper on the house, it doesn't even have to be drawing paper. It can be the paper from a grocery bag. It can be cardboard. Try different materials. You don't always have to have a pencil, right? You can make a mark with other materials from the house. I've had students even use makeup to create work. I've used, oil sticks from Farm and Fleet for like cattle marking and everything. Anything can make a mark. Old paint, old house paint can be a start if you don't have many materials. But to get inspired would be just go out there and draw. You know, imagination is always the strongest when you begin creating a work. You're always really excited in the beginning, and as the work continues, craftsmanship and technique start to set in. So to be inspired, just go out there and look and observe. All of us at one point in time, when we didn't have inhibitions, we were drawn towards something. We love something. We all love art. I mean, how do we think? We think in pictures, right? The first language was images. So rely on natural instinct. Rely on what inspires you. The things you look outside and you can say to yourself, hey, that's pretty cool. You know, look at that. What makes it cool? What is about it? To also be inspired would be to, you know, you don't have to always draw the perfect human being. So many of my students, especially in high school, judge each other on how well they can draw a human person. And if they can draw a human figure perfect, well, they're a beautiful artist, right? So you don't have to do that. You can look at the small details in the sidewalk. You can look at some of the most beautiful things that I love are like the patina of an aging sculpture. Look at these different things that you just find interesting and maybe highlight that in the drawing. Maybe just draw that component. You know, you can do everything from practicing to observe. Just being observant is a huge component of learning how to draw, seeing differently.
What does it bring to our lives if we draw? Even if, you know, we're someone like me and I know I'll never be particularly good at it, there's still something there for me, right?
Oh, for sure. I mean, the biggest thing that I mean, if I'm not creating for a while, I get itchy. I've got to go draw. I got to make something. That sense of creation, that sense of making thing, and this comes in all creative forms, from anything like baking, from cooking to sculpting, to any process-making orientated type project. We have this feeling of accomplishment. And what can you get out of it? For one, people learn. We all learn differently. And we begin to learn how things work. It's that design cycle. We can take things apart. We can see how we put them back together. We can become interested in color and the way color works on a certain surface, the way light hits a certain surface. And that ends up bringing us back to the work. It ends up filling a gap, you know. It ends up making you just fall in love with your surroundings and your culture, even.
Let's bring on a caller before we let you go. Cyril is with us in Madison. Cyril, hi.
Hello there. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what'd you want to tell us about, Cyril?
Well, listening to your guest got me thinking about when I was in high school. I used to do a lot of doodling on the margins of my notebook paper during class mm-hmm. and even after class. I was into airplanes at the time, so in the margins of my notebook, I would be drawing at least the nose and the cockpit of especially B-17 bombers. And on a larger section, I might draw ships of different kinds. Something to do before class started or between classes. It was enjoyable. And
Cyril, thank you so much. Chad, how about some specialized doodling there? How can we maybe capture our inner doodler and turn it into a little more drawing, not just in the margins anymore?
The doodling itself, everything from a small airplane to just a scribble. You can start to embrace that feeling, but try to challenge yourself with, you know, thicker lines, heavier lines, working with organic shapes, working with geometric shapes, trying to have rhythm, playing with space, playing with balance, you know, trying to make one of the first things a lot of people do is they draw a dead center. They make a symmetrical work. Try doing something asymmetrical where it goes off to the sides. It flows the composition. Use your entire page. Try to expand and push things. Keep pushing it out further. And play with texture. Play with the perspective to give it depth. And that can all happen with your doodles. I mean, there's a practice called the Zen line formation where you can listen to music and let other art forms influence how you work and how you create. But just try to expand, try to push it in a different direction is always something fun to experiment with. And it comes back to experimentation.
Chad, thanks so much for the inspiration today.
No problem.
Chad Sprezel-Wuchterell is a visual art instructor and fine art department chair at Ronald Reagan College Preparatory High School. He's the 2020 Wisconsin High School Teacher of the Year, and he joined us to talk about how to draw, no matter how old we are or how bad at it we are. Coming up, we'll learn more about the decision to send absentee ballot applications to millions of registered voters in the state and what it could mean for the November election. That's up next here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll hear about a very Wisconsin hobby, collecting dairy artifacts. First, the state will send roughly 2.7 million absentee ballot applications to nearly all registered voters in the state. The bipartisan Wisconsin Elections Commission approved the motion unanimously at their meeting yesterday, but there are some key details to hash out. The move was proposed to help the state better prepare for the 2020 general election and the uncertainty surrounding the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Sean Johnson is the Capital Bureau Chief for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Sean, welcome back.
Hey, Rob.
So this has been a while in the making. What was some of the back and forth that led us to this decision, Sean?
Well, I mean, I think what set it up partially is, you know, our experience in the April election when we saw 62% of people vote by mail in that election, which far surpassed any records that we ever had before in Wisconsin. And also, there was money made available to do things like this through the U.S. CARES Act, you know, that big bill that President Donald Trump signed at the end of March that passed Congress unanimously. That had money set aside for states to work on safe elections. And so this is funded by, you know, grants through that federal bill.
And to be precise here, they are not proposing mailing ballots. They're proposing mailing ballot applications. And then who would these be going to under this unanimous proposal, Sean?
Yeah, I mean, that is an important distinction. Mm-hmm. This is just mail that, you know, will inform people about their options as far as voting absentee and that they could mail back to get ballots. But it's going to be sent out to 2.7 million Wisconsin voters, roughly, who qualify. And there are a couple groups of people who won't get it. Those are voters who have already requested an absentee ballot. So they already have a request on file with the state. They're not going to get another piece of mail from the state letting them know about this option. And then the state also won't send this piece of mail to people who are flagged as having potentially moved. You know, they're referred to as being on the active movers list or the ERIC database. We've talked about this a lot in, a separate lawsuit. That's about 158,000 people who won't get this mailer because they're on that list. But roughly, you know, everybody else will. So you're looking at 2.7 million registered voters in Wisconsin who will get it.
This was a unanimous vote to do this thing, but it's not quite a done deal yet. If I understand, Sean, what does the Wisconsin Elections Commission want to do when they get another crack at it?
So the final thing that they have to do is they have to approve the wording of the letter that is going to go out. And, you know, that could be just a technicality or it could be a pretty important step. Because the Wisconsin Elections Commission is split evenly, 3-3 between Republicans and Democrats. And so especially on highly political issues, as absentee ballots have kind of become in the year 2020, they tend to have 3-3 votes. You know, the commission met about a week ago, and they were scheduled to take this up, and they weren't on the same page, and they got deadlocked in a 3-3 vote. It happens from time to time when you have three Republicans and three Democrats and the stakes are so high. And so you're asking this commission, which did decide 6-0 to send out this mailing, to get a majority or at least 4 votes to agree on the wording of the letter. You could imagine how that could get a little complicated. And there was a push by some of the Democrats on the commission to say, no, we're not coming back. We're just going to let the staff approve this letter. Whatever they say is okay. Let's vote now and get it done. But the Republican members of the commission pushed back and said, no, we have to approve the wording of this letter. It's going out to 2.7 million people. We were appointed here by public officials, and we have a duty to sign off on this stuff.
Talking to Sean Johnson, Capitol Bureau Chief for WPR News, looking at the Wisconsin Election Commission's decision to send ballot applications, absentee ballot applications, to over 2.5 million Wisconsin voters. Sean, we've heard about, this is not easy to have all these extra ballots and letters printed and then processed. We saw, as you mentioned, problems with April's elections, with the system being flooded with these absentee ballots, some of them, you know, getting hung up in the mail system and things like that. Is this another part of the story that the Elections Commission is working on?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the reason that the commission staff came up with this idea. And I mean, they serve at the direction of this board, but the staff is really saying that a lot of the problems that Wisconsin had in the April election came from people who either had not voted by mail before, so they were unfamiliar with some of the processes, or, you know, they failed at some of the requirements of voting absentee, or they sent it at the last minute and the system was kind of overwhelmed with this surge of absentee ballots at the last minute. When I say system, I'm kind of using that loosely, the postal system. All the local clerks who make elections run in Wisconsin, they had this just flood of absentee ballot requests, or not requests, excuse me, absentee ballots mailed in at the last minute. And so the idea by sending this letter out is that the state can maybe get ahead of that, let people know that this is an option, let them know that they can do it early, and kind of spread these requests out. Another reason that the state wants to do it, the Elections Commission wants to do it, is that you do have third parties who send out mailers suggesting that people vote absentee, and they sometimes have the wrong information. And, you know, that ends up, either intentionally or not, disenfranchising some people who fill out these forms that are not from the state and have incorrect information. People think that they've done the right thing, but they haven't.
Around the country, we've seen other states move to expand in one way or another mail-in access to voting or access to absentee ballots. The Trump administration, the president himself, and others have been critical of some of those states. At one point, the president threatening to cut off some kinds of federal funding for states doing this. Has there been any concern here in Wisconsin that we might see this kind of backlash if we're mailing out ballot applications?
So I've been watching for that today, just given that our Elections Commission decided to take this step. The president was he took aim at Michigan, really criticized Michigan specifically for sending out absentee ballot request forms to its voters. And that's essentially the same step we've taken. President Trump has not lashed out at Wisconsin today on Twitter. In fact, I haven't seen him do that previously, when you're talking about absentee voting issues in Wisconsin, for whatever reason. There is one school of thought that, strictly politically speaking, if cities like Madison and Milwaukee were going to send out mailers like this anyway and inform people about their ability to vote absentee, give them forms that they could send back to request absentee ballots, if they're doing that in Democratic strongholds, it may serve Republicans well politically to have these mailers go out to everyone so that they have some kind of an equal footing there.
We'll leave it there and watch for that final letter and the verbiage therein. Sean, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Rob.
That's Sean Johnson, Capitol Bureau Chief for Wisconsin Public Radio News. He joined us today to talk about the Wisconsin Election Commission's unanimous decision yesterday to send absentee ballot applications to roughly 2.7 million registered voters around the state. Still to be determined what the letter will look like and how long it would take the commission to sign off on the final wording. You can follow that and other important stories in state politics over at WPR.org/news. There's a long, lively tradition of Elvis impersonators out there. They make a living by recreating the performances of Elvis Presley at various stages of his career. But here's one venue they probably haven't performed in, deep down on the ocean floor. The impersonators I'm talking about are a kind of undersea scale worm that scientists have named the Elvis worm. And new research out this month finds there's more than just one species. Why are they called the Elvis worm? As reported in Science News, these particular scale worms have bright, sparkly scales that scientists thought looked a lot like the sequins on some of Presley's most famous outfits. One species, for example, is gold and pink. Another is a bluish-tinged rainbow spectrum. Also, like Elvis, the Elvis worms seem to dance around a lot. Unlike Elvis, the scale worms sometimes randomly freak out and start biting one another. What kind of songs would an undersea scale worm Elvis impersonator sing? I went online to find the answer. Here's what I found that I hadn't heard before. It's worm and Elvis news you can use. This is Central Time. We sing. The mighty sea is good to us, and we've got everything. Abalone steaks and tuna fish cakes. It's so heavenly. We know who we owe it to. Thanks to the rolling, rolling, rolling. Thanks to the rolling, rolling, rolling. Thanks to the rolling sea. Thanks to the